The next time you're sipping a cocktail or evening drink, consider the plants behind your beverage. Some of them might spring immediately to mind: grapes in your wine glass, rye in your whiskey bottle, juniper in your gin and tonic. But what about sorghum or coriander or bitter orange? An incredible diversity of grains and herbs and fruits goes into the world's alcoholic drinks, which means that for the botanically minded, a trip to the liquor store is a little different than it is for the rest of us. Amy Stewart explains what it's like in her new book, The Drunken Botanist: The Plants That Create the World's Great Drinks. Amy Stewart is the author of the bestsellers Wicked Bugs and Wicked Plants, and it's a pleasure to welcome her back to the roundtable this morning. Amy, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is a delight to have you with us, and I guess it's nice to talk about things that aren't wicked.
That's right, yeah. Absolutely. Some of these are almost even good for you.
So what got you in this mind of looking at not only these plants and their uses, but the plants and how they specifically apply to alcohol?
Well, like all great ideas, this one was born in a bar. I wish I could say that I wrote the idea down on a cocktail napkin, but like all writers, I carry index cards around with me, like a lot of writers, so I probably wrote it down on an index card. But anyway, I was having a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about all the plants that go into a bottle of gin, and I said, you know, people who are into plants should be really interested in just about anything behind the bar, because if you think about it, there's nothing in these bottles except distilled plant matter. That's all that's in there. And in that way, it's really fascinating from a horticultural perspective. Like, what is the taxonomy of all this stuff behind the bar?
So when you look at that stuff behind the bar, it's fascinating to read this book, because you will take a very, well, I don't know, simple drink, but certainly a popular drink like a Manhattan, and tell us what goes into that, but also include a great recipe, and tell us about what is in the rye that is in that Manhattan. So where do you begin when you have an idea like that? What is the first step in finding out what's in that stuff?
Well, what I decided to do is, you know, I'm going plant by plant. So like you said, there's a chapter on rye, and there's a chapter on juniper berries and all that stuff. So I'm going plant by plant, and I'm starting with all of the plants that we ferment or distill to actually make the alcohol. And so those are mostly grains and fruits. And then I get into all the spices and herbs and other fruits and things we use to flavor those drinks, usually added at the distillery. And then in the last part, I'm looking at the mixers and the fresh ingredients that you might use to make a cocktail. And for each one, I tried to track down the botanist who knew the most about that plant. So for the barley, for example, I reached out to somebody at the Scottish Crop Research Institute who's working on breeding better strains of barley to make scotch. And really tried to look at not just the botany and the science and the chemistry behind how that plant gets turned into alcohol, but also our cultural history. So I talked to historians, I talked to archaeologists about what our roots are with that plant in relation to alcohol.
When you explain this, and you do so in such a witty way, but also a very detailed way, what is it about these certain plants that lend themselves to alcohol, lend themselves to, I mean, what is the, because there are definite trends here, definite comparisons of what they possess that allow them to work in these alcoholic beverages.
Right. So for the plants that we actually ferment and distill, all they have to have is enough sugar, you know, enough sugar that's available and easy to ferment. I mean, when we're making alcohol, what we're doing is we're taking sugar and we're feeding it to yeast. And really, alcohol is just the waste byproduct of yeast. I know that doesn't sound very appealing, but that's all it is. So you know, a plant like barley is extremely well suited to turn into alcohol because the starch in that grain is very easily broken back into sugar. There's a lot of enzymes that do that work. So chemically, it's just very well suited. But of course, the other issue is taste. You know, it's just, what do we like to drink?
And you think of, I mean, because you make this point, even down to the olive, this is still something that we're growing and putting into our drink. I mean, it is all natural, isn't it?
It's pretty much all natural. I mean, the exceptions would be like the nasty, artificially flavored syrups that some bars keep back there with,
right.
Stuff like that. But apart from that, really, I think people would be surprised to realize that most your most ordinary gin or whiskey or vodka or liqueur is probably nothing but plants.
When you think of, you write about this in, and again, you include some incredible recipes, and I guess it brought up a thought in my mind, because we certainly know this from the making of beer and hops included in that, of a lot has to do with the recipe, right? I mean, of what we think of in one manufacturer's rye or whiskey or scotch can be very different recipe from another manufacturer.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm a bourbon drinker, and I always wondered why it is that I like Maker's Mark so much. It's a global brand, everybody's heard of it. It seems kind of common and ordinary. You can buy it everywhere. But I've tried a lot of different bourbons, but Maker's Mark is still what I just keep around the house. Well, what I found out is that they make their bourbon with a little bit of wheat. So most bourbon makers, it's mostly corn and then some barley and then a little bit of rye grain. And rye has a spicy, bitter note that's wonderful, but in the case of Makers, they use wheat instead. And wheat has this kind of soft, very accessible, kind of like bread, right? It's the reason we like bread so much. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Now that I know what the ingredients are, I know why that one's my favorite. That is the thing I like about it.
You have an interesting story in here, one that I thought was interesting about birch.
Yes. Well, birch has been used in a lot of different ways over the years to make wine and sort of some beers and also even some soft drinks. So the sap can be used. You can tap the sap and get a sugary substance that you can ferment and make into sort of this birch sap wine, and that's a very ancient recipe. And birch bark has also been used in beer. So that is a tree that gets used in a lot of different ways.
Because you talk about prohibition, and as it drew near, brewers were creating non-alcoholic versions of drinks, and that's how we got birch beer. Ultimately.
That's right. Yeah, you think about the term soft drink. So where does that come from? It was supposed to be an alternative to hard drinks. So the soft drink manufacturers were really behind prohibition and like, let's get people off these hard drinks and into soft drinks. And they were looking for sodas that would taste good, and they thought that would be enough for people. As long as it tasted interesting, people would happily give up their drink in favor of a soda.
It's also, the book is fascinating because you talk about these plants, and you'll read about celery, and you'll read about olives, and you'll read about rhubarb and pomegranates and limes and mint and strawberries, and then all of a sudden you come across Douglas fir, and you think, really? How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the truth is that just about anything on the planet has been fermented or distilled or mixed in with alcohol.
We have figured out how to get drunk from it.
We have. And with Douglas fir in particular, there's a wonderful distillery in Portland that makes a Douglas fir eau de vie. And they actually take buckets of the spirit out into the woods and drop the little young shoots, the little tips of Douglas fir into the spirit, so that it comes into contact as quickly as possible, and you get as much of that sort of Christmas tree flavor in your spirit.
Mm. And herbs play a large part, and as you note in the book, it can be as simple as a flavor or as a garnish or used in a syrup.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Herbs are a huge part of this. And, it really goes back to our history with plants as medicine. I mean, until, it wasn't really more than 150 years ago that the only medicines we had were just plants. That's kind of all there was. And soaking those plants in alcohol was a way to preserve them and have something on the shelf you could give people, a year later if they got sick. And so a lot of our liqueurs and our history with drinking herbs actually does come from early medicine.
When you think about the drinks that you talk about in this book, was there anything that was a challenge for you of finding out about it, or an ingredient or a plant that was either not included or was hard to find information about?
Oh, a lot of them were hard to find information about. One of my goals was to be very global with this. You know, it's easy to focus on North America and Europe when we're talking about alcohol, but I wanted to look at South America. I wanted to look at Africa, India, Asia, and so there were some challenges. There are some very obscure spirits in China that are hard to get information about, and even African drinking traditions tend to be very tribal and you know, I had to track down people in Africa who I thought I could interview who might know a little bit about it. So really for me, it was about getting to the far corners of the world and seeing how diverse our connection between plants and booze really is.
When I mentioned your book, Wicked Plants, and when you think of those wicked plants and the harm that they can cause, is it easier to write about things that have practical purposes than it is about the nefarious?
Well, you know, it's interesting that there's a little bit of both. You know, in Wicked Plants, I actually had a chapter called The Devil's Bartender, which was about the use of poisonous plants in alcohol, and that was kind of my early beginning of thinking about this stuff. But, you know, in both cases, actually one thing that both of those books have in common is that there were so many more plants I could have included. Almost all plants employ some kind of defensive strategy to keep from getting eaten, right? I mean, if you're a plant, not getting eaten is a pretty big priority when you wake up in the morning. So they use all kinds of chemical means to punish people who try to eat them. And the same is really true of alcohol. There's so many plants that have been used to make alcohol that it's like, where do you stop? I mean, these are both little books. If you hold them in your hand, they're kind of small books. They could have each been 4,000 pages long.
There's a lot more. So with that said, what's next?
It's a closely guarded secret.
Okay.
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
I don't want that. And let's see how the day goes.
Right.
But when you think about, but along this line, natural nature and its uses.
Well, there are endless fascinating topics in the natural world, and particularly when you get people involved and they start doing things like committing murder or making fear, then suddenly things get very interesting.
Right. So, I mean, you'll continue to write about things in this milieu as opposed to, like, pudding.
Sure.
Okay. the name of the book is The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World's Great Drinks. Amy Stewart is the author of Wicked Bugs and Wicked Plants. This book, The Drunken Botanist, is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. And as Amy mentioned, they're small books, but they're absolutely beautiful. They're beautifully published, and they're just gorgeous. And this book is no exception. The Drunken Botanist, published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Amy, thank you very much for being with us, as always. It's a delight to have you here.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
Thank you.